From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 27th day of July, 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It's Retirement Monday. Coming up, we'll talk with Kurt Kimmel from AgMarket.net about the commodity markets, an interesting last day of discussions with him, as he'll retire at the end of this month. And then we'll turn our attention to a broader look at the fundamentals with retiring agricultural economist Chad Hart from Iowa State University. He'll finish up his time there in the month of August. Along the way, I'll bring you the ag news for the afternoon, and we'll hear about the weather forecast too. Mark Russo will be here from Everstream Analytics on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to hear us at WILL.AG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day settled at $4.51¾, 12½ lower. December at $4.74, down 13½ in the March, down 13½ at $4.89½. August beans 39½ lower at $12.08 a bushel. September 11.99¾, down 40½. November futures 39¾ lower at $12.13¾. Bean meal at $320.80, down $10.50. The oil $2.87 lower. They finish the day at $71.46. December wheat down 18¢ at $6.77½, and that's in the soft red. The hard red at $7.45½, down 16 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago down $3.72½. Feeders at $9.52½ lower, and lean hogs for 100 pounds down $1.22½. Crude oil down around $7 at this hour in the West Texas at $82.35, and the crude for the Brent at $81.82, down $3.70. Here to talk about these numbers is Kurt Kimmel from AgMarket.net for the very last time. Thank you for joining us last week for Commodity Week. Congratulations on your impending retirement at the end of this week. We do appreciate all that you've done for Illinois Public Media and particularly for WILLAG.org over the decades.
Well, thank you, Todd. Those kind words. I've enjoyed it tremendously over the years. It's just unbelievable to have the opportunity to work with you, other brokers and analysts, and among all the listeners out there. It's been a great pleasure, great learning experience. I hate giving it up, but I got to draw the line somewhere here and let some younger, smarter people take the helm here, Todd. Thank you.
It does feel a little bit like the fire horse decided to buck today. and for you to have to say to hopeful there's a turnaround Tuesday one more time, I have to admit, what happened in this marketplace? It just really took a dive after, you know, making new contract highs in soybeans last week.
Oh, boy, yeah. Hopefully we're not back in the mindset of Mondays being downers, but yeah, it's kind of a mixed opening call last night. There was some ideas we could open steady, a little firm on the weather forecast and continued demand outlooks, but the market held together fairly well. But in the wee hours of the morning, all of a sudden we rolled over to the downside. Probably the main headline and it's debate on who said what or who's behind what, but we're looking at other countries. You know, China particularly has a vested interest in their Black Sea, Red Sea, and seeing transportation move out of those areas, working with Pakistan, trying to get the U.S. and Iran back to the negotiating table. Truth being said, they're probably both starting to get run low on missiles and drones and stuff, so they're probably in a position to take a little pause. But we're back in the mindset here to maybe see these talks take place and slow down and open up the ability for energies and ags products to move through those regions there, because the whole world needs these products. If that is to happen, of course, the Southern Hemisphere will benefit from it, and other countries around the world. So that would be welcome. But in the meantime, that put the grain market on the defensive. Estimates are that 14,200 contracts of beans were sold, about 11,000 contracts of corn, and about 3,200 contracts of wheat was sold. But we've got to remember, from the first part of July until just this last week, corn rallied about 66 cents off the low, and beans were up over $1.30 off the low. So if you just do some simple retracements to correct the overbought status of the market, hopefully here the market will come to its sense, and no one can have a turnaround Tuesday for everybody tomorrow.
So far this week, we now, because we only have Monday trade, we have an inside trading week. Are you fearful that it won't stay inside? And if it doesn't, which way is it going? And how, you talked about the volume of trade. Does that tell you anything about this market for today? Because if we looked at that in the overnight trade when it was down like 18 cents in November beans, there wasn't much trade then, but man, there, it appears there's been quite a bit of volume since then.
Yeah, several factors. There is basically, I think we need to hold the 38% retracement. East corn, 466 and three quarters. November beans, 1206 and a half. Of course, $12 magic number. Part of that too was the August options expired there on Friday, so some of that could have been some positioning of those options and futures coming together. But the key now is the eliminate the oversold status. We took the stairs up. We're kind of taking the elevator down. So if you count on corn, maybe Friday, day one, today two, maybe one more day tomorrow to test the support levels and chart gap areas and see if we can't stabilize. We did see some demand show up. We sold 132,000 tons of beans to China, 126,000 tons of beans to unknown destination. Export inspections report was fair, so we're shipping out what we sold. Then two, part of the sell-off was we put a little bit more moisture in the forecast, particularly for the Western Corn Belt. So we'll see what the weather maps say. And more importantly, too, world weather maps with France and Spain continue to experience some extreme temperatures and just a lack of precipitation as a whole.
Hey, thank you much. We appreciate all the decades worth of work, and we'll miss talking with you each and every Monday. Though I have to admit, it is really nice to have Logan on Monday mornings on our home station at willag.org, your son. I love having a young list of brokers and folks that have been on the air regularly. We do appreciate that, too.
Well, thank you, Todd. Those are very kind words, and I'm going to miss you all. It's been quite an adventure here. I was fortunate enough to work with some of the icons in the past through the normal office here and also through the station there, Todd.
Kurt Kimmel, of course, is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, ad hoc support payments coming from Washington, D.C. into farm country since the first Trump administration have been built into the whole of the farm economy, and it's unlikely they'll disappear soon. But if those funds are cut off, it could be a problem farmers should plan for today, says University of Illinois Extension agricultural economist Gary Schnittke.
And again, you don't see that happening because we're talking about making another round of ad hoc payments. If that happened, costs would need to adjust down, and that would include cash rents. And again, that's not likely, given the current political environment, but that's sort of the risk that is out there.
The risk is that cash rents, artificially supported by years of ad hoc federal payments, would remain high even as total farm revenue drops. Rural health advantages in the United States have disappeared. A new analysis from the University of Illinois and USDA shows growing health disparities are contributing to workforce challenges across rural America. The report finds adults ages 25 to 54 in rural communities are dying from natural causes at significantly higher rates than their urban counterparts, with cancer, heart disease, and circulatory diseases among the leading causes. Researchers say the trend could have lasting economic consequences by reducing the available workforce needed to support rural businesses and local economies. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by agricultural economist with Extension and based at Ames, Iowa, at Iowa State University, Chad Hart. Hi, Chad. Thank you for being with us. And I'm so sad that this will be the last time we talk in your official capacity because you're retiring next month from ISU. And I really have appreciated having these discussions with you.
I've appreciated time on the air with you as well and the fun discussions that we've had.
Well, I think we're going to finish up with a fun discussion because there is so much.
Yeah.
So very much going on in the commodity markets today. And by that, I mean all commodity markets across the board, from the energies to the agricultural commodities. Where would you like to start?
Oh, anywhere you'd like, because, yeah, there's a heck of a lot to talk about. And who knew that China joining peace discussions between the U.S. and Iran would be a major driver across all commodities.
Who knew that? Everything. That was not on anybody's bingo list, I'm sure.
No, it was not.
So tell me about impact of war, and depending on where it is, and how that has influenced our summer rallies.
Sure. As we're looking here, and the thing that we've got to recognize is, yeah, war does tend to drive up prices because it constrains how supplies can move around, not only the countryside, but the globe. And right now, we're looking at two major wars across the globe. For us in the U.S., we've mainly concentrated on the U.S.-Iran conflict there, but we've also got to remind ourselves of the Russia-Ukraine war. And in this case, these two wars are centered on two major, let's call it trade flow areas. And we've been spending a heck of a lot of time this summer talking about the Strait of Hormuz, but we've also got to remember that the Black Sea region moves a heck of a lot of agricultural product. And when we especially look at this latest rally, it's this combination of both those conduits got gummed up for a while due to the military conflicts, and that's what created a lot of emphasis for the rallies we have seen this summer.
How should producers think about it?
Well, one, we can't control it. So it's this idea of sort of, if you will, riding the waves of opportunity that it provides. We just watched one wave crest, basically, over the last week as we look here. And so it's a matter of making sure that we're ready to move in the markets if they do happen to move in our favor. This is not a market that's going to spend a lot of time sitting still. As we've experienced throughout this summer, we've been up and we've been down and we've went both places very quickly. We have taken the elevator everywhere. We have completely forgotten the escalators, it seems. So the idea is that, no, we have to be ready to market when the markets are favorable for us, and you don't have much time to think about it.
What do you think is favorable?
To me, it's more looking at what, how does that price compare to your cost of production? Is this a time where you're looking at some cash flow needs on the farm that you're going to need to pull the trigger over the next couple of weeks, figuring out where that line is. But, as we look here right now, even with the drop in corn, D's corn still weighing in at the 475 range. We've got no beans hanging over $12. These are pretty good prices on the future side, even after we've watched a downward move here. So it can help, reconceptualize again. Is this a good price that covers the bills on my farm?
On our programs, and you've seen it on others and heard about it too, there have been some numbers that have been bantered around about $6 corn at some point between now and the first quarter. I suppose that could be the case. Is that in your tally card?
It's not in my tally card. Can I build the storyline to get us there? Sure, I can. But as I'm looking at what we're seeing within the fundamentals of these markets, the challenge for the corn market is this, is that we're still dealing with the record crop from last fall. And as we're looking forward here, we're looking at the second largest crop coming at us this fall. That combination of supplies has been enough to overwhelm what has been actually pretty good demand over the past few years. And so while I think we do see, let's call it better pricing as we're looking forward over 2026 and 2027, I don't see us getting the six. I'm hoping this, if you will, slowly build back into that, into the low fives as we're looking here, because that demand structure, while it is great, so are our potential supplies, and we've got that across the board. Soybeans is in the same situation with the possibility of a record crop coming this fall.
You don't think that the problems in Europe, particularly with the French corn crop, will eat through that glut fairly quickly?
I think they'll pull some, but I don't know if there's enough there to necessarily, dramatically pull our prices higher there. It's this case of when you're looking there, yep, they are having severe problems. At the same time, too, the world has a lot of feed grain available right now.
What did last Friday's USDA cattle report tell you? Anything?
One of the things it tells me, and as we're looking at the cattle market, not only is it down because of what we're seeing, as you mentioned, sort of across the board, but we are now seeing the signs and the storylines that say the cattle herd may be stabilizing. That as we look here, looking at the cattle report, we saw beef replacement heifers up 3% compared to a year ago. So retention is starting to happen. You combine that with the news story of, you know, we're talking about opening up the border, bringing a few more feet, you know, starting to bring some feeder cattle back from Mexico. That's contributing to, we're bringing some more animals online. And so that's helping put a cap on where the cattle market is now.
Anything we ought to discuss before we let you go?
In this case, as we're looking here, I think what we're seeing here is, like I say, a heck of a lot of volatility. And I think for a lot of farmers, that volatility this summer has worked in our favor as long as we're willing to take advantage of it when those opportunities arise.
Thank you much. I appreciate it, and congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
That's Chad Hart. He is an agricultural economist at Iowa State University. Let's check in on the weather forecast now with Mark Russo. He is at Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Thanks much for being with us. I understand earlier in the day that you had a little rain shower, maybe a little volatile weather where you were. Can you tell me about that first?
Yeah, up here in the Chicago area, we had several supercell thunderstorms here come through, producing a myriad of severe weather, anywhere from very heavy rainfall to some dime to golf ball size hail, even some radar rotation here indicating potential tornadoes. So after how dry it's been the past 2 to 3 weeks, this is a bit of an unusual situation with the thunderstorm activity, although the setup was there for this development across the region.
Do you think that rainfall will have soaked in, or has it been dry enough for that to not quite be ready to be received by the soils?
Yeah, well, certainly a percentage went into runoff just because it was raining very hard. I would estimate 1 to 2 inches of rain per hour here, and I would estimate probably at my place anywhere from 3/4 to around an inch of rain. So I guess the one piece of good news here going forward is that with today's storms in Northeast Illinois, parts of Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan, this is the start of a more favorable pattern here coming up. So any areas that do miss out on rains right now, there will be more opportunities for those rains to soak in as we go through these final days of July and move into early August.
Well, tell me about the last week of July and the first few days of August and across the whole of the Corn Belt. What do you see?
Yeah, we are forecasting generally near normal rainfall totals, which for this time of year equates to around an inch or inch and a quarter per week across the Corn Belt. And again, starting today with these thunderstorms developing on the periphery of the ridge, there will be more opportunities for that taking place over the next several days. And even as we go into this weekend and on into next week, some additional rainfall opportunities that look to produce, again, near normal totals for this time of year. So the overall setup across the Corn Belt, as we go through these next 2 weeks, it's looking markedly different than this, you know, drier bias pattern that's been in place much of these past 2 to 3 weeks.
Is the Western Corn Belt still going to get the really, really hot temperatures that were forecast?
Yes, for a slight period of time. As we've seen here, like over the weekend, we saw temperatures climb into the upper 90s and 100s across much of Nebraska, Kansas, South Dakota, and some of the, you know, adjacent acreage right along the rivers there in Minnesota. Red River Valley, and then also further south, Missouri Valley as well. And so that's still going to continue for another couple of days. But after that, even the far western Midwest will cool down a bit, and kind of the core of heat associated with this ridge of high pressure will then be confined to mainly the high plains and then even into the Rockies as well.
So again, why is it that this is taking place? Is it retrograding the high back into where at this point that it's allowing cold air to spill into the middle part of the United States?
Yeah, it's all attributed to the ridge of high pressure, which right now is a very strong feature and centered over the plains. Because it's strong, it's encompassing a good portion here of the Corn Belt. But as we go through this week, that ridge will be shifting westward and be then located over the Rockies, in fact, over the Four Corners area by later on this week. And then the ridge will also be in a weakening mode as well. And ultimately, that weakening and movement of the ridge, that allows cold fronts to drop southward across the Corn Belt. And we expect that to basically be in place now as we go through, go into this early portion of August.
Sounds like a typical summertime oscillation. Does the weakening of the high mean anything as it relates to the month of August in general?
Not really here, Todd. Again, ridges tend to reach their peak strength in late July and early August. And again, this year with some of the ridging, we did see some of that ridging earlier in July be pretty, you know, intense here, especially, you know, in around the 4th of July holiday weekend. But ridges can still stay strong even into the latter portion of August. And so that's something to watch here, you know, longer term. Are there any indications that the ridge shifts directly over the Corn Belt later in August? We're not expecting that right now, but that's going to be an item to watch here given kind of the history of the ridge this season.
We'll check in with you again next week to see if and where it has moved. Thank you much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.